Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net controller for this LIMARC Technical Net. LIMARC Technical Net has been going strong for more than 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit down in front of the radio with the intent to learn from each other, inform each other, entertain each other. And so I thank you all for coming back again this Sunday night at 8 p.m. And I hope that we do a good job again. As always, I will drop for a second and come back and tell you the usual links.
This is WA2VFM with a question, and good evening.
Yes, hello, Sue. We haven't quite got to the questions yet. Do you have a pre-question question or just the generic TechNet question?
It has nothing to do with the net, but a week ago, Ken, WB2KWC, gave me some ideas, and I followed his instructions and one other operator, and I was able to fix my desktop computer. And I've been trying to find him for a week just to say thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, sometimes he comes by the technical net. If you can't find him on the technical net, he has the computer net that you probably talked him to on the third and fourth Wednesday of the month. You can try him Wednesday then.
Terrific. Thank you so very much. I appreciate it. Appreciate that sincerely. I will let you proceed. Have a wonderful time on the net. WA2VFM.
Okay, very good. Once again, I am AC2GS. The links that I usually suggest to people, if you want to contact me, this would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions, questions that you would normally ask on the technical net, but for one reason or another, if you were not within range of the repeater, you would ask the question and either listen on our internet streaming audio for the answer, or you could tag a archive copy of the technical net that's available and listen to it at a later time. Or if you have a topic for discussion, if something has hit the news and you'd like to share your expertise on the subject and discuss something, that's another reason. Or if you have a technical puzzle, we're always looking for it. Remember lost little bits and pieces. Because inevitably one guy will Google it and hit the push to talk and give the answer, and that's the end of that. Or if you would like to get Paul's opinion, if you hear something, purposes is spacenetreport@gmail.com, but my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, every week I cut and paste a whole bunch of interesting articles, YouTubes, all kinds of interesting stuff on my link page. They're available 24/7. Sometimes it's rowdy. You can get there by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. We have an audio stream available. You just type in technet.ac2gs.com, and you can hear the Glen Oaks repeater pretty much 24/7, but I set it up especially for the technical net. And I also like to remind people of my KC2NJI's great archive site called amateurradio.tv. He has archives of these technical nets going as far back as September 2006. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. Tonight we have regular scheduling planned. I will ask people if they have any technical questions or comments or what have you. I would prefer amateur radio-related questions at the very beginning, but as time goes on, everyone kind of realizes I'll accept any kind of science or technology-based question and try and do as best I can, and if I can't answer the question, perhaps someone listening can, or perhaps we can provide some reference materials to investigate the subject further. That should take us to about 10:15, in which Paul, WS2N, will give us the SpaceNet report till about 11 o'clock p.m., and then I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the week. So that's the plans, if the laws of physics...
W2BC.
Craig and Rich recognized. Anyone else? One more time. I mean, we'll always make room for anyone later on. But if anyone else would like to check in with any questions or comments tonight, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, very well. Hopefully as time goes on, there'll be more people. But for now, Craig, you're up first. What's your question? I'm assuming it's going to be something that you mentioned earlier before the TechNet began about a car that you're interested in and whether or not it's easy to install radio equipment. But that's just a guess. What's your topic for tonight, Craig?
Interestingly enough, it is. So it turns out Ken also has a Hyundai Tucson, and my sister, mainly, that's what I was initially looking at. So I test drove it, and I am perhaps interested in it as my next vehicle. I've been doing a little bit of research these past couple of months, except I've been looking on Facebook, and I can't seem to find anybody, even on YouTube, that has that particular vehicle with equipment installed. And according to the manufacturer's policy, they have an EMC testing site in Korea, and they have not experienced many problems with properly installed medium power transmitters. And it turns out their customer service has been able to straighten things out in a way. I mean, I shouldn't have a problem with 2-meter 440. HF is going to be the tricky one, since if it works in my 2015 Cherokee on 2040 and 10, now I want to move it to something else with a little bit more advanced technology, especially since it has all the safety features like the lane guard and such. So I wonder if anybody has that particular vehicle with the equipment and if anything has been successful. KD2OGB.
Okay, very good, Craig. I don't have that model. I don't have any experience with that model. So I throw it out to the general audience. If any of you either own one or know someone who owns one that installed radio equipment, I would imagine most stories I hear when it comes to things like 2 meters and 70 centimeters, it doesn't require that much power. So usually I haven't heard too many problems. It's when you start hooking up HF and you want to put out something like 100 watts and things like that go a little wonky. But nevertheless, anyone out there with any experience on this particular model, please hit that push to talk. Well, Craig, I think we're coming up dry tonight. You know, I don't know what to tell you. You know, Ken usually shows up, although you mentioned that Ken doesn't have any radios installed in it, but, you know, he might know stories from other people with a similar model car. You know, he might come in later, so you might try again, especially if he checks in to make a comment, or worse comes to worse. I'm sure he'd accept that question on his computer net.
I guess I could do that. The only thing, though, that's another thing that's going to be a little trickier is certain cars. Wow, Tabby, you really want to be played with today. Certain cars, I'm looking at my cat. Certain cars, when I bought my 2015 Cherokee, it actually had a pre-drilled hole with a little bit of rubber blocking it as a little accessory port to route cables. So that was a really easy out for me. All I just had to do was break that rubber and then feed the cables through and then just try to figure out a way to get them up to the battery. But with Hyundai, it's a little different. It's more solid near those pedals. So it looks like I'm also going to have to figure out that as well. What's nice is they didn't bring up any warranties or anything. So as long as everything is installed correctly, I guess similarly to Ford, I shouldn't really have a problem.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have a heck of a problem. Have you tried forums? I'm sure there are amateur forums that have topics that amount to different car models and how to get through the firewalls that some cars present a problem of getting cables through them and such. So have you attempted to Google to see if there's any relevant amateur radio forums available on the internet?
I'm afraid not. I did see one thing on Facebook, somebody bringing up a 2023 Tucson and like how to get an antenna put in. And the first comment I see is drill the hole, and I'm certainly not doing that out of a fresh out of the box car. I'll use a magnet or a hatch, thank you very much. And plus, that's what I was really going to do basically for 2 meter 440. I'm actually going to put 3 radios in there. I'm looking at another 2 meter 440 radio. I recently ripped out my Kenwood, and I actually copied all of my repeaters to some other channels temporarily. I'm actually now making a little document that contains all of my repeaters all the way down south as far as Florida and even out west, if, of course, this new vehicle were to come off the island. But yeah, one radio will be strictly for repeaters, another will be for my favorite public service, like the police, EMS, and so forth, and my railroading stuff, and then the third one will be HF. But really, the one radio will be my repeaters that I just want to use with an antenna straight on the roof. It's that, and then the other two will be pretty much almost receive only.
Yeah, well, it depends on the individual, depends upon the aesthetic. Some guys just like to drill a hole and screw the thing in. That way, absolutely positively, no one's going to steal it from you. If you use the magnetic mount and you trust people, you leave it there. If not, you pop it off and put it someplace at the bottom of under the seats in the cars so no one steals that from you. So it depends on your sense of aesthetics and what you think it's going to do to the value of the car. But I certainly would suggest, to do a generic Google search, and especially Reddit tends to have a lot of different topics. And I know they have an amateur radio subreddit. Occasionally you bump into guys with really bad dispositions, but if you don't mind people being a little on the nasty side, it might be very helpful. You might find some other people who've kind of invented the wheel before you, and so you don't have to invent it all over again.
I'll check Reddit, and I actually am going to try to stay on this net for as long as I can, just in case anybody does come out there that owns a Tucson that's got radios in it. For starters, even if I were to get this Tucson, for starters, what I'll do is do a temporary experimental test. Like, have the antenna straight on the roof. I'll have the car running, obviously. What I'll do is I'll run jumpers from the battery and then basically use that as an extension cord to connect my power from the radio and just put it somewhere, like in the passenger seat or wherever, and run a couple of tests and see if that works. And then if that works, I'll toss it in basically permanent.
AC2GS. Well, yeah, you could do it that way. That would kind of be a very partial test because radios and cars interact differently if you are gunning the engine and a lot more of the electronics is active rather than it just turned on in a parking type of position. But you could try a kind of a partial test like that and then move on. I couldn't see anything particularly going wrong with it. We had the discussion last week with a gentleman who was using an HF transceiver. I think his transceiver was just drawing too much power, and it was interfering with the rest of the electrical dashboard indicators and such. But, yeah, I mean, you can try that. I would sort of be surprised if anything terrible happens under those circumstances. Then, you know, when you're making holes and you're tapping into the power bus and you got the ignition going and everything's moving, that's going to be a much more rigorous test. But I hope everything works out. You know, a lot of people drive around, especially with 2 meters and 70 centimeters. As I said, if you're going to draw hundreds of watts of HF power, that could be a little bit more complicated. But I don't really perceive any significant problem. And not really experienced with that aspect of the hobby, but from what I hear people complaining about.
HF in my car, which it's a 2015 Jeep Cherokee Chrysler, now Fiat, 10, 20, and 40 meters works without a hiccup up to, I've tested it pretty much up to almost full power, 90 watts. According to Chrysler, my vehicle is shielded actually up to 100 watts. And of course, they tell you how to install everything and whatnot. And of course, the warranty doesn't cover any non-parts, or if a specific pair is needed, it wouldn't be covered. So be thankful that you don't invalidate the whole thing. Yeah, when I'm using HF in the car while parked and the car is running, generally, or if I'm actually mobile, I'm usually hitting around between 50 and 70 watts, and then when I'm usually parked with the car off, I have it running between 15 and 30 watts, provided that, of course, I start the car after like an hour or two, and not a hiccup on that.
Okay, so far so good. Like I said before, there are exceptional cases where people are trying to do things that 99% of hams don't do, and sometimes they get away with it, and sometimes they don't. But be optimistic. Like I said, check something like Reddit, because they have all kinds of subreddits, and every so often I'll wander over to the amateur radio area. You know, the last time I did, it was kind of sad. This guy who didn't have his license yet was asking, I think someone felt too many questions, and they thought he was going to pirate stuff or whatever, and he just didn't appreciate the response from the Reddit crowd. But I find, unfortunately, Reddit users tend to be not as courteous as people on the air are, for whatever reason. So as long as you got your ego locked out and someone suggests that you're a little addled, take it in good spirit that they unfortunately do that to everyone.
I'm seeing a couple of things about Days, but it doesn't mention anything about radio, so I might have to dive a little bit deeper in this. Again, if anybody out there does own one and does have at least VHF, UHF, that would kind of give me a little help, just so that way I know ahead of time, rather than just doing it later when I first get it and be surprised with something that I don't want to see. And remember, I currently have a 2015. When you go up to 2023, then there's more electronics that you have to worry about if you have too much power going through, and that's the thing that's kind of worrying me. Because HF I didn't really test in the car. It was kind of really a do-or-die situation, but I'll tell you how I tested it, and I told you this before. I started at 5 watts, and then I slowly worked my way every 10 watts, just keying and saying my call all the way up to 80 watts while the car is on, and not one hiccup.
Well, very good. You know, I mean, that certainly makes sense. Some guys just kind of floor it and hope for the best, but it's always good to take it a little slow at the beginning and feel the place out. You get a better idea. So I agree with your methods. The problem is it's a matter of the make, model, and the year, because these things are subject to change. Probably not that much year by year, but decade by decade, they make dramatic differences. And, you know, the more electronic equipment your new car is going to have, the more power requirements that it's going to greedily want to maintain, you know, without some other source bleeding away the power on a transceiver and such. So, again, I go back to, you know, you could do a generic Google search, but one of the things that I tend to do is go direct to Reddit, because they tend to have subcategories and they tend to more actively respond to comments. There are some forums available on the Internet, and you look at the date of things, and some threads haven't been responded to in 5 years. You know, some aspects of the Internet never die. They just kind of freeze. I wish you good luck, and if Ken pops up later on, I'll mention it to him, and we'll see what we can do for you.
I appreciate that. Once in a while, definitely do bring it up, and maybe see as more people join, maybe if anybody is willing to kind of give me a little hand. I'll try to keep my radio on as long as possible, provided it doesn't die. Otherwise, I'll have to go to the phone or find another battery. All right, I think that's all for now. I appreciate all the help, Roy. I'll see if I can dive deeper into some solutions here. NetControl AC2GS, KD2OGB.
Okay, very good, Craig. I wish you luck, and I'll remind people as the night progresses. Well, once again, I continue to be ACUGS. My name is Roy, and it's the Limark Technical Net. Next on our list for tonight is Rich W2BZ. What's your topic, question, or what have you tonight, Rich?
Good evening, Roy, and good evening, everybody. I have a question for who's ever listening and whomever works the low bands, or HF as they call them now, because I've been tuning around on 10 and 15 and it seems dead. You know, that may be because of my Mac loop doesn't like those bands, or that they're just dead, which is puzzling because of the sunspot cycle and where it's supposed to be at right now, which is approaching a peak. And I just wondered if it's just me and my inability to pull in signals, or is 10 especially, I'm especially interested in 10. Are any of you guys who are listening, do you make regular contacts on 10 or hear other stations on a daily basis on 10 or not? That's basically my question, Roy.
Okay, Rich, I appreciate it. I'd like to know as well. I mention regularly to people that very often, not this morning, but most Sunday mornings, I am the net control operator for the King County Radio Club's 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on 28.380 Upper Sideband. And during the sunspot minimum, things were relatively quiet. We talked to Queens and Staten Island and the edge of New Jersey and, of course, Brooklyn and such. Rarely, say once a month or twice a month, we would talk to some big antenna tower guy in Florida, but that was about it. And then the sunspots started to light up F1 and F2, and we talked to Washington State, and we talked to the United Kingdom, and we talked to Maine, and we talked down south, and we even talked to a country just above South Africa, Namibia. But as you mentioned, for the last two and a half months, it's been nothing. Gunish mit Gunish. We talk locally, and I haven't been able to rouse anyone farther away than Staten Island. So my experience have been consistently poor, despite what the sunspot numbers indicate. For some odd reason, locally, 10 meters seems dead. I don't know if it's some propagation flaw or whether it's total inactivity on the band, that everyone's got their got as much of 10 meters as they wanted, and they turned off their equipment. So I'm curious if anyone out there has any two cents to add to this conversation. Please feel free.
KG2RY, good evening.
Yes, hello, David. I just want to put in John KD2BDD. He's in New Jersey, I believe. He comes through the chat room. He wrote that while the solar flux may be high, the ionosphere is warm because it's summertime. This decreases the ionization level even though the solar flux may be high. He suggests wait until the fall for things to improve. But what would you like to say, David?
Well, I'd like to say that I listen mostly on 20 meters, and today, this afternoon, this evening, 20 meters was quite busy. I heard a station from Kuwait alert, station in Italy. We talked for a little bit, Tennessee, and Brazil. And I guess, you know, 10 meters, you know, maybe it's just like separate from all the rest of the band. Even heard some activity on 17. I heard some stations on 15 also. Go ahead.
Okay, yes, Chris?
Hi, Roy. I'm on listening at least daily for a few minutes in the afternoon or in the morning, and I can tell you 20 and 40 meters are on fire almost all the time, even when conditions are bad. I rarely, if ever, hear anything on 15 or 10 meters, and I don't think it has anything to do with conditions. I just think people aren't on those bands. Like I said, 20 and 40 are on fire almost all the time, even when conditions are bad and they're loaded. I mean, I'm looking right now all the way across the band on 7 megahertz. People are all over the place. But, yeah, I never see anything on those bands. That could be, you know, I just don't think they're active bands, that's all.
Okay, I mean, that certainly is one of the possibilities. Now, again, I've been on 10 meters almost every Sunday morning. And, you know, up until a couple of months ago, the sunspot activity and all of a sudden, you know, it kind of lit up. There were months that I could not place my 10-meter net on our usual frequency because it was almost always in use by someone else. So, you know, it was very busy. So whether there was a contest or not. I believe there was a lot of
QRS.
Yeah, Rich?
I'm just scratching my head because I remember in years past when the sunspot cycle was this high. I mean, Radio Shack used to sell a 10-meter-only transceiver. That's how popular 10 meters was at one time. And I agree with, I think it was Chris, who was saying that that just might not be many people on, period. But to hear an entire band, especially 10 meters, especially at the almost peak of a sunspot cycle, to be this dead, it's the first time in my 60-year ham radio career that this has happened. So it's just nuts. I also know that 20 and 40 are always, they're always hopping. So you take those two bands and 80 out of the equation, and you're left with 10 through 17, and it doesn't seem like anybody's home. And we'll see in the fall, which is, you know, right around the corner now, if things improve, but I don't know if it's seasonal like that. So it is a big head-scratcher.
D2STP.
Yes, Chris.
Thanks, Roy. I can say this on those on both 10 and 15 meters, for example, right now on the scope, there's maybe two or three or four digital users on each of those bands. So there's a couple of, I don't know what it is, FX8 or whatever the heck it is. I don't really use them at all. I haven't really played with the digital modes, but there are a couple of digital modes out there. I can hear them way off in the distance, but there's two or three on each of the bands. And then click over to 7 megahertz, and it's, you know, all the way across. Hard to find an empty spot. So there's a little bit of digital going on, but there's one other thought, and that is, I think a lot of the newer antennas that are for sale, like the NFEDs that are very popular, like I have, some of them don't cover those bands. So I wonder if that's possible, but it doesn't make sense because I know there's a lot of older generation people that have older antennas, but maybe that's just a thought. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a thought. It wouldn't be my thought. My only remaining HF antenna is a 5/8 wave for designed for 10 meters. So it's optimized for 10 meters and, you know, a little tweaking of the antenna tuner, and it's really close to 1-to-1. So I don't think, and I think that there's more than enough other people out there. There's lots of guys who bought cheap CB radios and antennas, and it just takes a little shortening of the whip, and voila, you have a 10-meter antenna. So I'm not quite sure if it's lack of a 10-meter capability that's doing it. I don't know. It's been my ongoing curiosity, especially since, you know, I look at different forums and such, and I don't see people complaining about it. You know, I know right here I complain a great deal about it. And, you know, getting back to something that Rich mentioned earlier, it depends which model of solar activity you believe in. If you believe in the old one that the NOAA and NASA believes in, then the sunspot maximum is about 2 years away. If you believe in a newfangled model that hasn't been terribly proven, then the sunspot maximum is only 1 year away. So, you know, we'll figure all that as time goes on, but I certainly hope John KD2BD is right, and with the fall weather, 10 meters lights up again, because, you know, as much as I love to talk to local people, that's what repeaters are for. You know, I kind of enjoy talking to the rest of the United States and bits and pieces of Europe on a 10-meter net. So we'll have to see how time goes. We still don't quite know if it's lack of activity or propagation is not as good as it should be for sundry reasons.
You know, Roy, I heard you for a couple of years mention
that nobody's home
net on Sunday.
Pretend
very well
for
weekly. I say I got it. Turn the radio on.
I do
Sunday
know
morning, and
that
get on there
even on 20 meters.
Listen in
when there's a contest on.
And for the last 2 years,
you know, it's hard
to
find the frequencies. But normally, I hear, you know, maybe 5 or 6 or 10 stations on, but during a contest, it really shows how many people are out there that aren't there, you know, on a normal day. Well, in a way, I'm a little bit relieved that it's not my mag loop, my cherished mag loop, that's not pulling in these signals, that nobody's hearing anything anyway. So, boy, I was excited for 10 meters to come alive because in the past, at the height of sunspot cycles, with 10 watts, you could work the world. Work the world on 10 meters. That's what 10 meters is known for. For when the sunspot activity is nearing a peak or at a peak, or trailing off of a peak a little bit, 10 meters is, you know, a 10-watt work-the-world band, and it's just not happening this time. I wonder if there's something that we're in a cycle within a cycle, you know what I mean? So this cycle, even though it's coming to the top of it, is not a very good cycle. I don't know. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, AC2GS. Rich, you doubled with Chris, but I heard you a little bit more than I heard Chris. I'll ask Chris if he wants to repeat what he just said. I don't know. It's still possible to do that. Like I mentioned before, I talked to Namibia twice a couple of months ago. That's a pretty distant communication on 10 meters. And, you know, contest does bring out a lot more activity. We old guys need an excuse to turn our radios on, unfortunately. And without an excuse, there's a bunch of other things distracting people. So you'll always get much more activity on a band when there's a proper contest going on. But even when there's no contest, you get some. And, you know, again, if you're looking for the peak of this particular sunspot cycle, that's probably not going to be for another 2 years. If the activity was less than usual, it would show up on the recorded numbers, and they've been plotting them regularly. And if anything, they're a little bit more active than the model would suggest. So I don't think that it's the sunspot activity going wonky this time, but I can't tell you exactly what it is. So with all that in mind, let me turn it over to Chris. Unfortunately, Chris, you doubled completely with Rich, so I couldn't figure out what you were saying.
Thanks, Roy. I figured that out. Sorry about that. That was my fault. I was just mentioning for a couple of years now, you mention up pretty often your 10-meter net. And every week I say to myself, I got to, next week I'm going to turn it on Sunday morning and try to hear you or get listen in or get involved with that net. And for 2 years now, I forget every Sunday. I can just never remember to do that. I gotta put a reminder in. I want to try to get in that. But I really think it's just lack of people on those bands because I just don't see much activity ever. And other than a couple of digital modes, which is exactly what's going on right now, that's just my guess. K2STP.
Well, you know, there's always going to be people on FT8. FT8 is one of the most popular modes around ever since Joe Taylor released it. People are generating lots and lots of square yards of wallpaper for their shack. Of worked all states, worked all this, worked all that. So that's sort of a constant in the universe. You know, but even if it was lack of activity, you would sort of think that there'd be a little bit here and a little bit there, but it's just dead as the proverbial doornail. I can't raise anything or anyone, any place at any time. So, again, it remains a mystery. Again, if it's just summer, late spring doldrums, then, you know, we'll see in the seasons switching before you know it. It'll be fall. And, again, I'm optimistic. But, you know, if it doesn't come back, so be it. It doesn't come back. But I hope it does, because otherwise it's just confusing the heck out of me.
On another note, Roy, I got a question for you, K2STP.
Yeah, sure.
I'm just curious how you're getting into the repeater tonight, because you sound completely different. It's a very strong signal in the repeater. However, it's skippy like a digital, you know, maybe like a poor cell phone. So you can make it out perfect. It's no problem there. It's, I'm just curious what you're using to get in tonight. It's obviously something different.
Well, it's just sort of the same thing as last week. I'm going through the back door of the All-Star node. So that's why it's digital, because it is. All-Star, I think, uses Asterisk as its underlying voice-over internet protocol technology. You know, Asterisk's been around for, I don't know, 25, 30 years.
Gotcha, okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I hear that right away. I can't stand those the digital, like the DMR. It just drives me nuts. I know some people say they like it. I don't know how. It drives me nuts listening to that. Anyway, K2STP?
KD2OGB.
KG2RY,
yes, Frank?
About the propagation.
Okay, one at a time. First Craig, then David. So, Craig, you go first.
Real quick, I got to force a time limit on this on that topic about the Hyundai Tucson with 2 meter 440 2023. If nothing comes up, if something comes up after that time, just email it to me because I want to go to bed early. Thanks, KD2LGB.
Okay, David.
We were talking about propagation and the sunspot cycle and the activity on 10 meters, 15 and 20 maybe, 17, 40. And I find that it, you know, for me it's less about, how to say, you know, when you have 7 years or 10 years or 12 years and... the activity as a result of that, and I find it's more like from day to day, from like one part of the day to the other part of the day, there's more activity in the afternoon, more activity in the evening, more activity in the morning, you know, and it just goes up and down like that. This is my observation.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of complications. The F1, F2 layer is more ionized during heavy sunspot activity than low sunspot activity. But then the day, you know, the morning, dawn, morning, afternoon, dusk, adds another complicating turn to the... you know, maximum usable frequency and the ionosphere and activity and such. So it's all a mishmash, and I agree with you on that. It's just that usually you can find better propagation on 6 and 10 during heightened sunspot activity than you can in less sunspot activity. And right now I'm getting about the same activity, DX activity on 10 meters that I had during the very lowest depths of the previous sunspot cycle. So it's a wee bit confusing at this point.
Well, you know, Roy, I know what you mean, but I think that in order to find out if a band is active any given day or any time of day, you have to listen and listen, you know, a couple of times a day, if that's possible, see if there are any signals up there, 10 meters or, you know, 20 meters or 12 meters.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always nice, especially if you have an antenna that allows you to, you know, if you don't get through on one band, you go to another band, and you can go to another band. And as was mentioned earlier, 20 tends to be more consistent. 40, I have found 40 to be the most consistent, whether the sunspot activity is high or low, whether it's daytime or nighttime. Usually, there's a decent amount of 40-meter activity. 80 is much more sensitive to low-light conditions, 80 is sort of dead during the daytime and very lively at night, 160 meters especially. But, you know, each band has their own different qualities and within each day, within each season, and within each sunspot cycle. And you have to be a little flexible and not kind of demand what you want when you want it.
Yeah, I think you got to know what you want within reason. And I know that for me, 40 meters is the noisiest band that my antenna can work. It's 40 meters is all man-made noise, and also background noise is S9. And so I don't go there so often, but sometimes I hear signals coming through the noise. And maybe it's time for me to look into a better noise filter on my radio.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, as far as propagation, haven't there been one or two flares, I mean, CME, coronal mass ejections, in the last couple of weeks? I was wondering if that has had any effect on propagation, but I know when that happens, you get a complete blackout. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that could explain a couple here and there, but it's been rather consistently for months now, and we certainly haven't had that many ejection phenomena to explain that. So, you know, if there was a lights out for about 3-4 days, you know, every other week or every third week, yeah, it could be that, but it's just consistently dead.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
BB2BXO with some comments. Net control, you want me to go ahead? BB2BXO.
Yes, Frank, please go ahead.
Okay, I wasn't sure whether there was a dropout up there or whether you wanted the other guy to go ahead and finish Roy. Conditions, I've observed conditions are definitely better than they were in the sunspot minimum, but I tend to agree we're not really experiencing the true sunspot peak propagation. I think the most memorable, two really memorable sunspot peaks I can remember, I started hamming in 1971 and experienced the double peak of 1972 with a rather minimal station at the time, but still worked some amazing DX. And so even though the sunspot peak, that peak, which I think was cycle 19, is it 19 or 20? Some spot geek can correct me if I'm wrong on that, or just look it up on Giggle. The official peak was 1968. There was a double peak in, there was another peak in 1972, which gave us amazing additional year or so of amazing propagation. Same thing happened, I think, with the 1988 peak, which I actually got to experience from the tropics, operating 9Y4TT for 2 weeks, which was kind of interesting, sitting on 10 meters until midnight working stations. Then again, I got back on using a remote site subscription around 2015, and we still had something resembling sunspot peak conditions with a double peak. So it's entirely possible we're not really near the best of the propagation yet. And let me let it drop, and then I'd like to make one or two more comments. Okay, Roy? Okay. Another thing is there are some tools available to us now to monitor propagation that we haven't had before. We had some of them in the last sunspot peak, but we definitely have them now. There's RBN, the Reverse Beacon Network. and there's an experiment some of these CW types can try. I haven't tried it, not because I'm not an active CW operator, but just because I'm using pay-for-play remote sites, is to run a CQDX on any band with your call sign, and RBN, the Remote Beacon Network, RBN.org, is supposed to pick that up, and any site in the world that hears you will display your call sign, that you've been tagged, so to speak. And you could see how your signal is propagating, not just how people think their propagation is. Another tool we have is PSK Reporter. If you have FT8 or some other mode, you can put out a signal and look at their map and see where you're being heard, which doesn't necessarily mean where you can work. I see my signal spotted in Japan when it's noon there, and I probably would not achieve it. A two-way QSO on 30 meters. But that's kind of interesting. You have that tool. You also have, if you want to, which is kind of interesting to listen to, is the software-defined receiver, the SDR.org network. And you can listen to the bands from almost any part of the world and see what the band sounds like in the area you want to work. And that's kind of amusing to listen to the bands in another part of the world. But I do tend to agree, even though conditions are better, they're not as great as we necessarily expect them to be at the peak. So I don't think we're there yet. But go ahead, Roy, WB2BX.
Yeah, I don't think we're anywhere near the peak. Like I said before, if you believe the shiny new motto that a couple of guys really believe in, it's 1 year away. If you believe NASA and NOAA's models that they've been using for a long time, it's 2 years away. Difficult to say. Yeah, theoretically, I could kind of do reverse beacons and all kinds of maneuvers. At this point, it's just, it's not going to change whatever the hell's going on there. You know, I come to the 10-meter band on a Sunday morning and look at the pan adapter, and it's flat as a pancake. Whether it's lack of activity or a lack of propagation or a little too much of both, it's still kind of limiting what I can do with the 10-meter net on when things are supposed to be a wee bit better. But we'll see what happens as time progresses. Again, John mentions to me that CQ Magazine had a story about it recently, and in July, so he sent me a link for that, and I'll have to check it out.
W2BZ.
Yes, Rich.
Brought something up that I continually forget to find out about, and that is, these reverse beacon things like WhisperNet, and there are other ones. I just have an analog radio, an old Kenwood 440, but I know there's a way, and especially on CW, you can actually go on a website and find out where your signal is being heard. I've never done it. I would really like to know how to do that.
Okay. WhisperNet, you do need to have an audio connection to a computer because, again, that's Joe Taylor's software that operates the WhisperNet transmissions, and then you look up a map to see where it lights up with your call. Frank, you sound like you're much more familiar with the reverse beacons, and especially the CW-operated ones. If you want to expand a little bit for Rich's benefit, please do.
Yeah, Rich, my understanding is, and I have not tried it just because I'm using getting on HF mainly with remote sites for a couple of minutes a day. It was said CQDX, in CW and your call sign a couple of times, and I think the RBN.org site explains it to give you the proper protocol, and the RBN sites are supposed to pick you up and spot you, and there are sites all over the world. You do not need digital capability to do this, just either a computer or a smartphone to look at RBN.org. That's my understanding of how it works for CW. It also goes by the name of CW Skimmers, I think. So if you have trouble finding RBN.org, you can probably try Googling that. Go ahead.
Could you spell that RBN.org phonetically?
Ah, you want to test my knowledge of NATO phonetics. I'm a CW op. No. Roger, Bravo, November. NATO phonetics is a terrible act. I probably didn't. Anyway, RBN. Roger, Bravo. RBN, I believe it's RBN.org. Oscar Radio Golf. Go ahead.
It's also an acronym for Perverse Beacon Node.
Perverse Beacon Node, okay. I'm not great at the phonetics either. I still spell my name Roger Ida Charlie Henry. So I'm not great at that, but I'm sure I could Google CW Skimmers and find it also. I would really play around with that if I could figure out how to do it. All right. Thanks, Roy. And Frank.
KG2RY.
Yeah, David recognized. I just want to mention, I have CW Skimmer. CW Skimmer really, at least what I've seen of it, doesn't really do that. CW Skimmer is an excellent way of decoding more than one CW transmission at a time. If you have a radio that has a really wide bandwidth, you can pour the audio into the software, and over a range of frequencies, it can show you the CW that's being received and try as best it can to decode it into English. You can get a raw output of any character it thinks it recognizes. You can ask it to just identify call signs, so it will kind of squelch and clear random occurrences that it picks up. But if it sees something that's within a call signs format, it will present you with the call sign of either the receiving or sending person that's in the CW signal. So I don't think quite CW Skimmer is what you're looking for, but you know, Google and Google is our friend. Dave, you want to say something?
Yeah. It must have been around 1975. I got my advanced class ticket. I had a pair of Kenwood twins, and I was operating CW on 15 meters. 15 meters was really hot. I hooked up to a 40-meter dipole. I spent all of my time making QSOs. There was no computer then. You didn't get any of these things back then. So, you know, maybe, how to say, you know, how you want to designate your time, you know, and how to get the most out of the hobby.
AC2GS. Well, like I always say, different strokes for different folks. If there's something you do that you like doing, then continue doing it because you like doing it. If there's other things that you think you might like, try them. If you like them, do them. I like computers. I have played around with computers since I was able to scratch up enough money to buy my Atari 800. I read about them years before. I was one of the kids with the popular electronic magazines who kind of read about the first personal microcomputer I read the same issue that Bill Gates read, and of course, reading it changed his life a lot more than it changed mine. But I'm a big personal computer guy. I love them. Again, if you check me out in QRZ, you have a kind of image of what my